Welcome to Foresight Health's Roundup Podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, June 27th. A week ago today was the official first day of summer. I think it started way earlier than that, with a stretch of record-breaking heat here in Chicago. And they say there's no climate change. But there is, and it's having a detrimental effect on our health. And that's what we're going to talk about on today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, I'm in Las Vegas for the HFMA's annual meeting, and the temperature here is 115 degrees. Haven't been outside for 3 days. So the fact we're talking about climate change is probably appropriate. And above and beyond that, I'm staying in the Mandalay Bay Hotel, which was the site of the horrific October 2017 mass killing, largest one in the history of the United States, killed 60, wounded over 400. And the shooter got off over 1,000 rounds in a very short period of time because he was using a bump stock. Trump administration's Justice Department, believe it or not, then outlawed bump stocks until last week when the Supreme Court legalized them. So lots going on here in the Mandalay Bay Hotel related to climate change and gun violence.
Yeah, a lot of public health threats are right there at your door. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
I am well, but you know, we're having some terrifying moments in our house teaching our 15-year-old daughter how to drive. So, you know, wish me luck.
Yeah. I took our kids to the local cemetery because I figure if they go off the road, you know, the people that they hit are already dead. So I think, so.
Good thinking.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Julie.
Thank you.
Now, before we talk about climate change and public health, let me ask you about your aha moment when it comes to climate change. Dave, what changed in your world to tell you that something is different?
Well, I'd say there were two things. We never used to have winter thunderstorms in Chicago, and now we get them with some regularity and even tornadoes. But that's the phenomenon that just didn't exist before. And the other thing is pollen. I never had any allergies until recently. And now, you know, spring, fall, walks in the park, my eyes are watering, I'm sneezing. So those two things, thunderstorms and pollen.
Yeah, year-round Claritin now for me too. Thanks, Dave. Julie, same thing. At what moment did you think things are really different?
Well, you know, I grew up in South Florida and we had hurricanes once in a blue moon. And I can remember, you know, battening down the hatches and living through one and then going in afterwards and seeing the destruction. And it was kind of an activity. And now I'm having conversations with my 85-year-old mother about whether we should move her out of Florida for the 4 of now 5 month hurricane season. Like, move her, because she gets evacuated multiple times a season and the media is hyping the worst hurricane season ever on record. So it just, it's so palpable when you live in these climates, you know, across these years and feel it differently.
Yeah. It's the frequency. That's pretty scary. For me, it's how much it snows here in the winter. We used to get 3 or 4 really big snowfalls a season. I have pictures. But what do they say now? I have receipts. So, and we used to get 3 or 4 consecutive weeks of sub-zero temperatures, and neither has happened in at least 5 years, maybe more. So I'm definitely a believer. And so are a lot of other people. Let me run down the top line findings of 3 new reports on climate change and public health and then get your reaction. The first is a series of 4 reports published by the World Health Organization. The main report links climate changes like high temperatures, ambient air pollution, and climate-related natural disasters to such problems as adverse birth outcomes, high blood pressure, respiratory illnesses, and mental health disorders. The second is a survey of more than 1,000 U.S. adults conducted by Axios and Ipsos, the market research firm. 65% agreed that climate change is a threat to human health. 40% said climate change poses a moderate to large risk to their own health, but only 5% cited climate change as the number one public health threat. Number one was opioids and fentanyl at 24%. Hard to argue with that. I'd put guns at number one. Guns were number four, but they're number one here in Chicago. Anyway, the third is a study in JAMA Cardiology that looked at nearly 500 different studies on environmental stressors in cardiovascular health. The meta review concluded that environmental stressors like extreme temperatures and hurricanes were linked to increased morbidity and mortality from heart disease. Dave, what's your big takeaway from these three reports? If you ran a hospital or health system, how would you respond? And from a health policy perspective, how would you nudge the industry in the right direction through payment reform?
Let's tackle hospitals first. One of the things I've learned over the last few years, I did some work with a company called Kreft that specializes in helping hospitals do ESG investing, is that hospitals are huge polluters, responsible for 10% of the greenhouse gases in the country. And so the first thing I would do is become a good citizen. I don't think hospitals can really get on their high horse and talk about climate change when they're actually big polluters. And the good news here is that by addressing energy inefficiency in old operating plants, hospitals, health systems can generate savings, which they desperately need. And they, if they are so minded, can apply them to the S and the G. The writing we did with Kreft concluded you can't do S and G without doing the E first. And I absolutely agree with that. So hospitals, stop polluting, save money, be good for the world. On the policy side, there's really good news here too. You know, in the new book, Paul and I say that the disruptive innovation that's going to bring down the castle is what we call 3D WPH, democratized and decentralized distribution of whole person health. It's got, and I've talked about it before on the podcast, but it's got two components. The first is shifting away from fragmented disease-centric care to whole person health the way the VA does. And then the second thing is getting it out of hospitals into more convenient, lower cost, less polluting venues. And so if we do the right thing, if we get more balance between healthcare and health, a significant byproduct of that is we will eliminate a significant amount of energy waste and pollution that goes with high cost centralized care delivery. So hospitals, stop polluting. And from a policy perspective, let's get on with the business of investing in pro-health activities, catching disease earlier, having a healthier, happier population, and in the process, making the country more environmentally safe, greener. What's wrong with any of that?
Yeah, goes hand in hand. That's great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Dave, did you see that UCSD study about the increasing polarization in the coverage of climate change between, you know, the elite news and the Heartland news? The study found that between 2011 and 2022, news sources like New York Times and Wall Street Journal saw an increase in their climate change coverage by 299%, whereas the Heartland news sources increased their coverage by 144%. So in other words, in 2011, there was a 30% chance that a Heartland paper would run a story on climate change, and today there's about a 3% chance. Mm-hmm. So what are the odds that the non-believers are actually or believe that they are all fear?
Well, I'm going to deal. I can't speak to their beliefs, or actually I will in a second, but the reality of whether they're healthy or not, the odds of that are zero, absolutely zero. And, you know, that's based on some research that Paul and I did for the new book. And what we discovered was that in the 1980s, life expectancy between urban and rural communities was roughly equivalent. Today, and this is looking at age groups 35 to 64, today, people in that age group, 35 to 64, in rural areas are 45% more likely to die than those in urban areas. It's really a remarkable shift. And I really wrestle with the way people get their news and form opinions today. And my belief is that the desire of human beings to be connected socially is so strong that it almost overwhelms everything else. Really, people are being ignorant to their own detriment. And we got to figure out some way to talk about health and pro-health so we as a nation can get healthier together. And we got to just penetrate this kind of barrier that prevents people from seeing facts, science, that medicine that are in their interest. It's really a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss until you start rolling around with an oxygen tank, right? Couldn't agree more. Thanks, Dave. Julie, it's your turn. What's your one big takeaway from these three new reports? What innovations in the market do you see addressing climate change in public health? And if you started a company to address the issue, what would you do?
These reports, of course, Brody, you asked me for one, but they make me think of two things. The first is we have the power. Eric Topol has been talking about the quantified self movement for at least 15 years, if not more. And the guy had spreadsheets on everything going on in his body for years before there were apps and wearables and da da da. And you know a lot. The greater we have the data, we, all of us, are creating the data all the time on our phones, our wearables, through online search. And several companies are already monetizing that data to help predict all sorts of health activities that we would expect. And they translate into ED visits. What should we expect over the 4th of July? Admissions. What types of admissions? I mean, this is happening today for, you know, perhaps the most forward-leaning health systems on the top of the pin. And, you know, a decade ago, Dave, you remember Propeller Health?
Yeah.
Does that company ring a bell?
Yeah.
Propeller Health, amazing founder, so visionary, created tools to track and manage asthma and COPD. And the FDA cleared his device that effectively was a smart inhaler. And it would provide, you know, personalized information through your phone and web analytics and personal services to patients and families and doctors, and then provide that data in, well, ultimately the first place they did this was Sacramento, I think, provided the data back to public health so public health could see what was happening with inhaler use around the Sacramento area. And this was, you know, happening during some of the early years when the heat and the air quality from fires and the like were really starting to become a big issue. So it's not only possible, but we've seen great work in this area already. So that's kind of my number one takeaway. Number two is the second trend that gives me hope here is the latest wave of innovative companies have brought a focus on specific diseases. And we could talk for hours about why these companies are challenged because of payers' inability to slice and dice risk data. But I'll go back to my point. You know, the godfather of these clinical models is really in oncology. They kind of carved out the space, but we're also seeing it in kidney care, GI and autoimmune, cardiology, and the list could go on. And in these models, more so than any health system or physician, they could lead the integration of personalized data, not just to monitor the known issues about us, but to signal the unknown issues. So, Dave, I don't know that I would start a new company, but I think about it through a healthcare lens or health lens, and we need to figure out how to create health with the data we have. Now, there are probably plenty of companies that have already started that could predict, and I know that there are. The issue is who will buy the predictions? Who cares? And I hope that these kinds of companies care.
Right. Your point's well taken, Julie. Thank you. Dave, any questions for Julie?
The thing that surprised me the most by the JAMA meta study on the links between climate change and cardiovascular disease that Berta referenced is that there have been 492 observational studies looking at this or examining the climate-related stressors and their links to heart disease. 492, you know, talk about a medical research industrial complex. 182 of these examined extreme temperature, 210 examined ground-level ozone, 45 examined wildfire smoke, and 63 examined extreme weather events. Often, and this ties back a little bit to how we get our news and what we can trust, but often when researchers go to look for something, particularly in observational studies, they find it. Let's call this risk predetermined outcome bias. My question for you is, how do we separate out the signal from the noise in this meta-study in JAMA? Political opinions do shape the design of supposedly unbiased research, medical research, economic research, research of all kinds. Money talks. Look at the studies on hospital economics funded by Arnold Ventures, including the one this week in the NBER paper that links increasing healthcare prices with higher unemployment. That may very well be true, but I doubt that Arnold-funded studies ever reach a conclusion that they don't already have in advance. So without becoming climate change deniers, which none of us are, should we have any concerns about the meta-study's somewhat obvious conclusions?
It's a lot there.
Yeah, per usual, right? Sorry.
No, you know, it just reminds me of a story about something related but very different. The Daily ran last week about the one gun study by a professor at Georgetown that has been behind so many of the political positions and much of the rhetoric and a lot of the decisions that are being made or overturned. You just talked about one at the top of the hour. This Georgetown professor, you know, the Daily investigator really worked to try to get to this Georgetown professor, really framed kind of who he is. And, you know, it looks like he has some undisclosed ties to pro-gun activists. And, you know, when you look at the fact that there's one study that is being cited by so many on the pro-gun side, it's not a peer review study. You know, similar things are happening in our industry. We're rolling away a bit from our peer review. Now, this isn't JAMA, but it's hard. We are, with what is happening with social media and the democratization, we're getting away from really understanding what we can believe in, that's for sure.
Yeah. Wasn't there a similar situation with autism and vaccines, right? There was some study that connected the two and then that was discredited, but that one study, you know, has lived on and fueled the anti-vax movement. So
and it's written into a ton of legal decisions. So that's the scary part,
yeah,
which will happen here too.
All good points. Thanks, Julie. My takeaway is that I'm going to start cutting my grass earlier in the day before it gets really hot out, much to the chagrin of my neighbors. Nothing like hearing the lawnmower running at 7 a.m. And I should probably switch to an electric mower, not a gas-powered mower. So I have to do my part. Now let's talk about other big news that happened this past week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I'm sure you saw that Risent has made its second acquisition announcement in Cone Health. And I saw Jaewon Ryu a couple weeks ago, and it does sound like things are starting to really move forward in the Risent world. So I think it's exciting.
Yeah. That North Carolina is the land of health systems. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Thank you. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Well, that Risent news is big news. But anyway, today, June 27th, 2024, is the 10th anniversary of Foresight Health.
Hey.
That's the date on the letter I got from the IRS giving me my EIN number. So
congratulations and happy anniversary.
10 years today of meeting payroll consistently and building, I think, a pretty effective media platform to promote accurate thinking, honest thinking on market-based healthcare reform. And thank you to you both for your part. And, you know, I've been thinking about the last 10 years, and I don't think what Foresight is saying today is that much different than 10 years ago, although the receptivity to the ideas is orders of magnitude greater. The one thing, just personally speaking, that is different for me, 10 years ago when I launched the company, I thought the healthcare industry could change inside out, that the push for value-based reform was so strong that incumbents could grab hold of it and transform the industry. And I just no longer believe that's going to happen, that the change coming to the healthcare industry is going to be outside in the way it has been in almost every other industry that's transformed. So 10 years on, still at it, waking up every morning trying to fix the broken healthcare system, hopefully a little smarter and a little more effective.
Well, congratulations, Dave, and thank you for the opportunity to shoot my mouth off every week.
You do a great job.
Julie too. Well done. Well done. Thank you both. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.